Recorded live in downtown Newtown, this is Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. Welcome, everybody, to Season 1, Episode 15 of Rancho Notorious. I'm Dan Slevin, and I'm not Kaylee Carruthers, who is at this very moment helping members of her family move house in Vancouver, Canada. So she's unable to join us this week. Also, not Kaylee Carruthers is Liam McGurran, who is here with us at Rancho Notorious in the flesh. Hello, Liam.
Hello, and thank you for inviting me to Rancho Notorious. Again, Dan, for the very first time.
Here you are. And it's a pleasure to have you sitting across the room as opposed to on that digital electronic virtual method that we were using before, which is kind of impersonal, isn't it?
I know, because I'm quite surprised none of your guests have mentioned how big your mansion actually is. I especially like this two-story statue of Alexander Payne. It's beautiful. Did you sculpt that yourself?
No. But eBay has lots of wonders on it if you spend enough time searching into its bowels. But you know, it's called Rancho for a reason. You know, it's because it's a spread, isn't it?
Oh right, yeah. That's why he doesn't have the leaf and the. never mind.
On today's show, Liam will hopefully stick to the script and tell us some more about the goings on at flix.co.nz and flix.com.au, where he works. Both of those places are the best way for movie fans in New Zealand and Australia to find out what's playing at their local cinema and indeed whether they should go and see it. At least the best non-podcasty way, that is, yeah. And so, you know, we're going to find out what's going on at Flix Central a little bit later on. I'll ask you about that.
Sure.
Between us, we're also going to be reviewing David Fincher's Gone Girl, which opens all over the world today, or at least this weekend. New Zealand, of course, having the benefit of being the first country to see the light. Also, we open our films on a Thursday, not a Friday, so, you know, very much a head start on the rest of the world. We're also going to be talking about The Equalizer, starring Denzel Washington as a very genial old dude, but, you know, you really don't want to mess with him.
No, he continues the quadrilogy of old man action films.
Is it featuring him or featuring lots of people?
I think there's like an Avengers squad that's coming out very soon, because you have, obviously, Liam Neeson as the Captain America of that, or Captain Ireland, I guess. And then you have Keanu Reeves trying to take that mantle with John Wick.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that last week.
Oh, I cannot wait. It looks so cool.
And, exactly. Put them all together.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Well, I mean, something's got to replace the Expendables franchise when those guys finally are reduced to their wheelchairs.
With commendable actors, yeah, cool.
So all of that, plus the usual mess of news, stats and opinion. First of all, what is in the mailbag? And this is where I would normally go, what is in the mailbag, Kaylee? But she's not here. So I'm going to have a look. So Twitter, people have been talking to us on Twitter. Actually, it's this pretty much Fred Thompson, who our mailbag cannot do without. He's been to see The Maze Runner, and his two-word review for that is narrative puzzle. Sequel priming left more questions than answers, but action beats were excellent.
And I praise him for not using amazing or runs dry or some overused pun.
You can rely on Fred to not sink to those levels.
Thank you, Fred.
His two-word review for The Box Trolls: disgustingly cheesy, so dark, so macabre, but so much fun. Me like it a lot. Oh, pun. He dropped one in there.
I have to review this, Fred.
And The Babadook, two-word review from Fred Thompson: maternal monster, the scariest movie I've seen in a long time, but also found it poignant and emotional. And who else have we heard from? We've heard from Reese Pie on Twitter, whose two-word review for Ida: cinematographic perfection, absolutely beautiful, Bellatar with warmth, and an editor. So thanks very much for all of your feedback. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the Maze Runner when we do the top fives, I think. But
sure thing.
So maybe it's time we actually jumped to that. So have you got the New Zealand top five in front of you?
Well, yes, I do.
So I'm counting down from five.
Number five is, unfortunately, Planes, Fire and Rescue, which jumped the Box Trolls at number six by a measly $10,000. I hate Disney now. Number four, Step Up All In, which dropped from number two. Number three.
Week number two. So and so School Holidays is obviously having a big impact here.
Yeah. Number three, new entry, The Equalizer.
That's Denzel Washington, which we'll be talking about a little bit later on. Have to say that it was a slender house at the session that I was at last night for The Equalizer. I was expecting maybe Wednesday night's a tougher night, you know?
Yeah, I figured we had the same Denzel following as the States did, because The Equalizer was number one on the opening week, but I guess not.
Mm.
Number two, falling from number one, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the number one, the new entry, The Maze Runner.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles down 50% in terms of box office, which is it sounds like a lot, but actually it's pretty much normal, isn't it? That from week one to week two.
Yeah, it's made its money. It's happy where it is.
and they've already greenlit the next lot, haven't they?
Yep, they have.
You sound so enthusiastic. I haven't seen it, so
actually I'm just trying to avoid my opinion that I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, can we just move on before?
Yeah, okay, all right.
Thank you.
Australia, let's have a look across the ditch. Planes, Fire and Rescue in week two. Is at number five. But in Australia, they seem to have a clue or two, because the Box Trolls is at number four.
Hey!
And, a very much bigger. It was, what, 10 grand difference here in New Zealand. Australia, about $300,000 difference, the Box Trolls over Planes, Fire and Rescue. So, it's a plus point for our Australian cousins. Number three, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Number two, The Equalizer in its first week. And number one, The Maze Runner.
Mm.
Now, I think you've got the US there next.
Yes, I do. And at number five is Dolphin Tale 2.
Now, that's making quite serious money in America, isn't it? I mean, that's it got dropped off the New Zealand release schedule before it even came out. I think that
did the first one make any money in New Zealand? I feel like it just kind of evaporated.
That's a very good question. I don't know if it made any money, but I liked it.
Yeah, I never saw it. I mean, I like dolphins.
I like Morgan Freeman. So there you go.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. Morgan Freeman's in it.
Yeah, and yeah, Harry Connick Jr. I mean, it's like a cast of luminaries.
That's a winner. Give it an Oscar right now. Mm. Number four, This Is Where I Leave You.
Can you remind me what that one is?
Yeah, it seems like another Jason Bateman. Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, group family drama comedy.
Right. Comedy, yeah.
Trying to do what the Skeleton Twins did really well.
Dax Shepard is in it.
Oh, that's right. But he's only in there, like, for one scene in the trailer, so they just get rid of him very quickly.
Yeah, he's not on the poster, his picture isn't in the poster. We were looking at this last night, and Timothy Oliphant, who is an actor since Deadwood that I've had, my eye on, but whose career has gone precisely nowhere since then.
He's really good.
He is really good, exactly. And his name is on the poster, but he doesn't get a photo either.
How does Dax Shepard get roles? Is he, like, sleeping on some famous person's couch and they just sort of bring him along every so often?
What's the name of the Veronica Mars one? The pretty blonde one.
Her name is Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell, that's right. Well, yes. they're an item. So.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mean hookups.
So
I hate him so much. Number three is The Box Trolls.
Yep.
Number two is The Maze Runner. And number one is The Equalizer.
Well, there you go. No school holidays in America to skew the data.
No.
Looking at the UK, which just seems to go in a weird direction, there seems to be not much rhyme nor reason to what happens in the UK box office. Number five, A Walk Among the Tombstones, which is Liam Neeson being mean again. Number four, What We Did on Our Holiday, a UK film, and I don't know what that
I
one
don't
is.
Know what it is either.
We really need to do some homework. Number three, The Box Trolls. Number two, The Equalizer. And interestingly, number one in the UK, it's not even a movie. It's the Billy Elliot theatre presentation, one of those alternative content deals.
We're getting so much more alternative content in New Zealand cinemas now, it seems.
Yeah, and when it starts to make this sort of money,
yeah,
you know,
why not?
Exactly. I'm going to presume that the Monty Python thing did well.
Yeah, it did. I think it was only in cinemas for...
very limited, wasn't
very
it?
Very limited. There was one day where it was sort of everywhere and then just very minute releases ever since then, but did pretty well.
Yeah, and at the moment it's we have that consistency from NT Live, National Theatre. There's the Met Opera. Those are the solid ones. There's been a little bit of action from the Globe Theatre, their Shakespeare. But when you look at these numbers, Billy Elliot the musical making $2 million in a week.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that where this is going. It fascinates me because when all the cinemas went digital, there was a lot of the argument for cinema owners was you'll be able to play all this alternative content. It'd be fantastic. Everybody was saying sports. You'll be able to sell tickets to the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Watching them live, the Rugby World Cup, 3D, etc., etc. And sport has been a complete fizzer on every level. Who would have thought that it would be Doctor Who that would be, you know, driving people back to cinemas?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think that part of the reason sport failed badly in cinemas is because there's still that culture that says, shut the hell up when you're in the movie theatre. And seeing a sports game amongst a movie crowd must imply some sort of cognitive dissonance where you just don't know what you're meant to do in that situation.
Yeah.
Going against your natural instinct to woo for your team against going your natural instinct to be absolutely silent.
Yeah, do they leave the house lights up, or do they turn, or do you sit in the dark?
I don't know. I've never been to one because it sounded stupid when I had a really good TV to watch it.
Exactly. When you can get up in the middle, where, like, that's the other thing about sports is that there's these breaks, natural breaks, where getting up and going and getting another beer makes just perfect sense.
But yeah, because then you could drag the fridge right next to you and have your five tuis during the first half.
Indeed. Now, listeners who are unfamiliar with Liam on social media and Liam's professional capacity working for Flix might not be aware that all of this intensely well-observed industry knowledge that we're experiencing here comes from the fact that you are one of the rare person in New Zealand in that you actually make a living writing for and cartooning as well for a website about movies.
I'm not sure who else thought of the idea of cartooning and movie reviewing at the same time in New Zealand. It's been done in the States, but don't worry about them. But yeah, I'm doing it. I think it's fun. I like doing it.
Great. For listeners around New Zealand who aren't familiar with Flix, and maybe overseas listeners who don't know what Flix is, could you perhaps put it in some context for us?
Yeah, sure. So I can tell you where to find my stuff, actually. If you go to flix.co.nz, then you can see there's a button that says blog. Go to that, and you'll see A Man of 100 Words. That's all my stuff. And that's basically me spouting a whole bunch of opinions about movie-going culture and movie trends. And it's usually nothing drastic. In fact, the last one I did was mapping around the entire history of iconic deaths of cinema dogs. Which I have to admit emotionally drained me to the point of the fetal position, but it was a lot of fun.
And do you review, are you part of the formal reviewing team?
I do. I am actually an adult grown-up movie reviewer as well, and I don't do stick figures or any cartooning when I do those. That's just based on that's just the usual reviewing circuit. But the blog is very much my own thing and very chaotic.
So tell us a little bit about Flix, Flix with a C, K-S, New Zealand, and perhaps where it came from, and what do you consider its main purpose to be?
Its main and ultimate purpose is to help you find a movie. And we've actually moved... It was originally just for movie times, where you can go to the site, it'll tell you where you are, you click where you are, it'll tell you, you click a movie, and it will show you all the times for any cinema that's near you. Very easy, very quick. We've now moved over to where you can find that movie on VOD or on DVD in New Zealand. We're trying to branch out to more DVD and video on demand sections. Like, we've just recently updated with an iTunes section, and we have QuickFlix going on, and we plan to expand it even more. So basically, you don't need to ever leave your home ever.
Well, I mean, we would love for you to leave your home every now and then and actually go to the movies and support exhibitors. The app, the iOS app, and I'm guessing there's an Android app as well that does, does the same thing. The mobile app was my Bible for such a long time because when I was trying to review lots of films and, you know, I would be, it would be, it'd be fantastic. It would literally be able to help me decide, you know, if I calculated travel time in between one cinema and another, which session would be the absolute optimum one for me to get to.
And we've recently updated it. We've actually gone through a few updates now where we just ironed out a whole bunch of the bugs and to make it just as pristine as and as clean and as complain-proof as possible.
And don't tell me that people have been complaining. They're churlish, aren't they?
You know, it's like when people complained about the Old Testament, and so we've made the New Testament called Flex 1.4.
And is there a similar app for the Australian version of the site?
Yes, there is. It is called Flix. That's F-L-I-K-S, no C, .com.au.
And that's I have to say that that's... from a brand point of view, slightly confusing. Was there some domain name issues?
Yeah, some jerky jerk took the actual our name for .com.au, and so we had to just omit something, which happened to be the C.
Apart from the impending upgrades of the app, where else is the site going to go? What have you got on the agenda?
Well. As you see, we've just started a new video series called Flix Talks, which this wasn't my idea. I actually got a friend of mine, Nick Garrett, who is with a very, very slick video company called chillbox.co.nz, if you want to go to their website. He wanted to... Chillbox Creative, sorry. He came to me and he wanted to do this very straightforward, very dry video interview series where we just... sit down, talk to Kiwi filmmakers about the Kiwi filmmaking process. And we've got three entries right now. We did Housebound. Before that, we did The Last Saint. And just recently, we did Hip Operation with Brent Evans.
And so you host and do those interviews?
I do.
Yeah. And how does it feel to be on video? To be, you know, like, are you getting a good response from those?
Well, from the people who have seen it, yeah, we are. I think people are very, very delighted that there is video content that's going in this depth because I think that's kind of missing in New Zealand.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I've talked to a lot of people about, you know, when we were doing the podcast before this one, when Kaylee and I were doing that, we had people talking to us and saying, oh, you should put it on video, you know, it'd be great. It's like, well, yeah, maybe not. Yeah. But also, there was a lot of talk there that basically people wouldn't sit still for more than 2 minutes to watch an online video.
Yeah.
But you're finding that people are actually responding well to that depth?
Well, what I've tried to do is put timestamps specifically on the questions. So if there's a whole bunch of content that you're not interested in the video, there might be, say, 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there that you would be interested in. So it sort of breaks it up.
All right.
But if you do want the entire shebang, then you can go ahead for it.
And that's only available through the Flix site? You can't sort of...
It's also on YouTube.
Ah, right.
But okay. It's embedded onto Flix, so it's just an easy place to find it.
Okay. Look, I'm really looking forward to seeing future developments with Flix. It is absolutely the New Zealand and Australian Bible when it comes to movie times, to opinion, and you know, it just the thoroughness of it is something that really appeals to somebody like me.
You catch that fish yet? Hmm?
Oh yeah, he did.
It's a happy ending.
Not exactly. The old man met his greatest adversary just when he thought that part of his life was over.
Why didn't he just let the fish go?
Old man's got to be the old man. Fish has got to be the fish. Got to be who you are in this world, right? No matter what.
He didn't take out five pimps. He took out the East Coast hub of the Russian mafia.
A man with his skill. I want to know who he really is.
He won't stop until he kills you and anyone you care about.
Denzel Washington, who is, I think... he's got to be up there with, like, the biggest box office star that doesn't appear in franchises. You know, like, I was reading something about how this is the fourth film of his in a row that's open to more than $10 million US, and none of them have been franchises, sequels, or anything like original. I mean, it's not terribly original, is it? Let's be honest. But original-ish content. The Equalizer is this film. This is a remake of a British TV show from the 80s, which was kind of beloved by cult TV fans. I don't think it actually bears any relationship to it, apart from really the vague concept in the title.
Did you ever watch this show?
Yeah, I did. I did when I was a kid. Edward Wood was the star of, and he was one of the great British hard men actors. You know, yeah. Like, it was kind of meaner than The Sweeney. You know, like The Equalizer. Yeah. Kind of brutal, which was quite rugged for British television in those days.
I only saw a 30-second clip on YouTube, but he kind of seemed, not just British, but super British. And I want a spot of revenge, kind of British.
Yeah. And that's right. And now we've relocated this central character to Boston for no apparent reason. Took me a while to work it out, actually. It wasn't until I saw Boston Sand and Cement Company that I realised where it was. I'm sure Americans would go look at that bridge and go, oh, yeah, that's Boston, we know. Perhaps you could fill us in a little bit on what the general premise of The Equalizer is about.
Yeah, sure. Denzel Washington plays this seemingly normal dude at a hardware store. By the way, his name's Bob. He works in a building store. You put the pieces together. And he goes to a cafe? It's a bar, sort of a corner bar.
A diner bar
where he chills out. He likes to read his book, which, by the way, pretty much tells you exactly where the movie is going, because they're not subtle with their metaphors. In fact, at one point, he literally shoves a book down someone's throat.
Yes, I get what you're saying there, but I kind of appreciated the fact that there was even an attempt at metaphor, let alone, you know, like so many of these films don't even bother with that.
Yeah, I kind of think the metaphor goes a bit too literal when they're actually describing the metaphor to you in clear detail. It's like explaining the joke. The joke's gone, the magic's gone. Anyway, he's at this diner bar. He meets up with a very young prostitute. That's Chloe Moretz Grace, or did I say that the wrong way around? Chloe Grace Moretz.
I think it's pretty much interchangeable.
When she gets badly beaten, he decides, okay, the entire prostitution ring has to go.
Yeah, he that's right. She is enthralled to the Russian mob.
Yes.
And he turns up in his eminently reasonable, slightly older building supplies shop style, and says, what can we do about this? And they laugh at him, and he kills them all.
Yeah.
Fast as well. And, okay, so, you know, so it turns out, as we've probably guessed at a very early stage just by looking at his discipline of his daily routines, and we get a lot of that sort of detail about how he lives, that there's some kind of disciplined military background to him, and you sort of pretty much know that if he's going to walk into a room full of five Russian mobsters, he's going to have the skills.
Yeah.
Or at least the person being his double and stuntman is going to have the skills.
But it's not just simple army tactics. He gets very, very creative with the way he minces people.
Indeed. And it's also kind of gross.
Yeah, it's a hard R18 rating, and it definitely earns it.
Yeah, if there's one thing I've learned about Denzel Washington is that at least in his more recent chapters of his career, he loves playing experts, doesn't he? Like, he is almost these characters are almost flawless in terms of, you know, like, even when it comes to driving the train, he was the best train driver that there ever was.
Yeah, the only difference here is that he doesn't have a very stupid white guy to just tell off in every
and explain.
Instance.
No, yeah. he has a fat Latin American offsider who he's training to be a security guard.
That's right. What was his name? Ralphie. typical fat guy name, Ralphie. And he loses, Ralphie loses the weight to become a security guard, but he's still really, really fat.
Yeah, and is not a very good security guard, as we find out a little bit later on. So,
where it's like, can you run over there? Running! With a bloody security badge on. Jesus Christ.
There are a few important factors about this film that potential viewers need to bear in mind. One is the fact that it is longer than your average miniseries. It's like 2.5 hours long, isn't it? And it feels like it.
And it only has the plot of one episode of that miniseries, really.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all spun out at enormous length. It's like it's directed by Antoine Fuqua, who last worked with Denzel Washington on Training Day, you know, the Academy Award winner. And Fuqua's a good director, I think. Like, I think that, you know, each individual shot looks great. And you could sort of see scene by scene, that's a scene that works. That's the scene that works. And then you put them all together and you've got this bloated, flabby mess.
It's kind of like he just repeats it over and over again. But that one trick, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And to a point.
There's and you know, he's worked out there is the transitions between scenes, the noisy cut of something in the hardware store, usually like a buzzsaw or something.
I tell you what was one of the most impressive things about this movie, the sound design.
Mm.
Yeah, every punch that that connected, it wasn't too cartoonishly overblown, but wasn't too realistically padded. It was just right to make it feel crunchy. And
yeah, I can imagine that would be the case. I felt like I was watching it in a cinema where perhaps the speakers or the amps or something weren't quite operating at full capacity. Yeah, it was one of the smaller theatres here in Wellington, and I get the impression that I didn't get the full oomph.
Ooh, right. Yeah, I was in one of the event cinemas, and it really got to me, especially the drill. Literally jumped at the drill sound.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though you could tell what was coming.
You could tell what was coming, and to its credit, even though it was R18, didn't actually show the gruesome remains of it or the gruesome action being shown. It just all relied on sound effect, and it worked even better that way.
Talking of gruesome, we should mention the presence of Martin Chalkash in this film, who's one of New Zealand's finest export actors, Toi Whakaari graduate. And unlike a lot of the successful New Zealand actors who are doing well overseas, doesn't seem to get invited back. I mean, what did we see him in earlier on this year? Was Spider-Man, was the most recent Spider-Man this year? He was, wasn't he?
Yeah,
earlier on this year, and he played, I mean, it was, he seems to specialise now. Hollywood has got him tagged for when you want an over-the-top caricature villain with a funny accent.
He can do extremely condensed anger very well. In fact, he manages to focus it all on like one side of his upper lip. So I'm going to do it for Dan now. You can't see this, but it's sort of like, and that's all the anger you're ever going to see from this guy. Yeah. But it's effective.
It is effective. He's also I think known as an accent specialist, and I can't speak to how accurate his Russian accent was, but he certainly, I mean, you certainly believe that he was had the capacity to do all the mean stuff that he was going to do.
Yeah.
But it's like when it's often I find with him these days is that he turns up and it's like the film turns into a different film when he's on when he's on screen. It's like there's Denzel underacting, you know, pretty much consistently. And in fact, Denzel doing not much more than just flashing those teeth every now and then and becoming charismatic movie star actor and then dropping back into almost nothingness and then letting the stuntman do all the fighting for him. Because I'm going to assume, having watched Denzel Washington like walking around in this film, that like his hips have gone, basically. He's sort of walking like John Wayne now.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that all of the really... And there's no really big stunts. It's all just close-in fighting, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think about a good 75% of that works really well.
Mm.
Yeah. the other 25%, I reckon, is quite forgettable. But this movie has the problem that I had with... it has the same problem I had with Jack Reacher, where the guy is simply too perfect, and they demonstrate this quite clearly on. It's all in his background and just how cool and calm and collected Denzel Washington is that it gets to a point where you don't even feel like this guy is ever in any danger.
No, he's flawless, except he has one fight where it looks like he might be in a little bit of trouble, but it's almost as if a screenwriter or a producer has gone, you know what, we need one of these moments, otherwise it's just a fairy tale.
And even then, he just kind of looked more annoyed than he did, than pleading for his life. It definitely doesn't have that diehard factor about it.
No, exactly, and you're right that that is still the gold standard for these sorts of things. And in fact, the whole third act of this film is basically Die Hard at Bunnings.
Yeah,
and a tip for filmmakers everywhere: there's still a great film to be made. Die Hard at Bunnings.
Yeah.
In fact, we have lots of Bunnings to choose from, so let's destroy some. It wasn't really believable, and it did spin out to an enormous amount of length.
Yeah.
Do you have two words?
Sky Movies.
Sky Movies Gold or Sky Movies Premium?
Just Sky Movies.
All right. In honour of the costume design for the Equalizer, my two-word review is Dad Pants. In a brave attempt to read my copywriting, Liam is going to fill in for Kaylee Carruthers here with the news.
Tetris, the movie, is going to be the long-awaited reality for film and gaming fans now that Threshold Entertainment have announced that the Block Alignment classic is going to be turned into what's described as an epic sci-fi adventure.
I should point out that even I haven't read these after I wrote them. So these sentences may make no sense, but good luck
making
a stab at it.
Maybe move the pieces around, rotate them, drop them into place, and then just eradicate them all.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to Tetris the movie? Have you got any idea what they're talking about?
No. I think you can see the excitement.
Apparently,
on my face.
This is the company that made Mortal Kombat, and so therefore they have.
Oh my god, I love the Mortal Kombat movie. This might actually work, guys. Okay, I'm excited now. Number two. The equally long awaited sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the Auckland shot Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The Green Legend, is going to break new distribution ground with a simultaneous release in August 2015 via Netflix and IMAX.
Interesting, isn't it, how they're basically going for the biggest screen possible.
To the smallest screen possible.
And they obviously didn't sign up too many deals before this was announced, because two-thirds of the IMAX screens in America, the chains that own IMAX screens, have just gone, no, go to buggery. we're not playing your silly game. So it's actually going to be a fairly limp release, I think.
Yeah, it's like they're going for all and broke at the same time. How could you lose and win?
But we have one IMAX screen in New Zealand, and that, by all accounts, is actually doing good business and still the primo place to watch that big screen entertainment. So maybe it'll do some business here.
On a similar note, Forrest Gump is coming to IMAX, and I heard it.
Stop it.
No, yeah, I'm not kidding.
Forrest Gump. Is it the 20th anniversary?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God, I feel so old.
But, so for whatever reason, they're bringing it to IMAX, which I heard is of DVD quality. But, hey, if you want to see a Forrest Gump on DVD on IMAX, go for your life. While doing publicity for Gone Girl.
Okay, typo, right.
All right, sorry. For Gone Girl, David Fincher has let slip that one of his upcoming projects is to direct the entire first season of The Utopia for HBO, a remake of a UK Channel 4 thriller.
Okay, so there was quite a lot of spare extra words in that sentence, but yeah. I think with the general gist is Fincher's doing television and not just
House of Cards,
and he only did the first two episodes of that and then sort of walked away from it and said, you know, here's the Bible, you go for it. He wants to do all of it, and this is Steven Soderbergh's doing the same thing, he's made an entire TV series. And the fact that a director wants to not just work on the pilot and then set a standard for it, but actually be behind the camera for an entire series. And, you know, for those of us that have been sort of depressed about how long the gap has been between Fincher films, yep, the fact that we might be able to watch like a Fincher film every week, it's not a bad option, right?
That's true, but doesn't this all seem kind of recent to you?
Well, you know, the news is today's news. I went and got it off the...
I meant from remaking Utopia when it's a fairly recent show in itself in the UK.
Yeah. Well, this is because no one in America can understand British accents.
Right.
So
you basically have to
remake.
That completely slipped my mind, of course. Yeah, cool. And the news we missed last week, because Dan and Kaylee recorded the show really early in the morning, Marvel has made it to university, specifically the University of Baltimore, who are now offering a course demonstrating how Marvel's series of interconnected films and television shows, plus related media and comic book sources, and Joseph Campbell's monomyth...
That's not my word. It's not even a typo. That's just cut and pasted.
Oh. Joseph Campbell's something of the hero's journey offer important insights into modern culture.
And, you know, we are all doomed, basically, as a result of this. Undergraduates everywhere. This idea that, I don't know. Mind you, I should count back a little bit and realize that we all thought we were doomed when a university in America decided that they would offer a course in Madonna songs. So, you know, and that's 25 years ago. So.
Well, actually...
Here we still are.
I think they secretly opened this course for DC. Just saying.
Everyone told us and told us marriage is hard work. Not for me and Nick.
As you all know, my wife, Amy Elliott Dunn, disappeared 3 days ago. I had nothing to do with the disappearance of my wife. I have nothing to hide.
Sammy got friends we can talk to?
No, not really.
You don't know if she has friends, you don't know what she does all day, and you don't know your wife's blood type.
Just being a good guy, so everybody can see him being a good guy.
Well, you really don't like him, do you?
All I'm trying to do is be nice to the people who are volunteering to help find Amy.
We've talked about David Fincher, and it's time to also talk about Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike, who are the lead actors in Gone Girl. And this seems to be the only film that anybody's talking about at the moment. And more specifically, the only thing that people are talking about when it comes to this film is Ben Affleck's wiener. I've seen more uses of the word wiener on social media today than in the last 12 months.
And his isn't the only wiener you see in that film. But
is it really his wiener, though? Let's get this out of the way.
You reckon it was a stunt wiener?
I think that, well, everything's digital these days. If you've ever seen a making of a recent David Fincher film, there's almost nothing real in there at all. Like, he just, you know, everything's played with.
Well, this isn't Lars von Trier's Gone Girl. Although saying that makes me want to see Lars von Trier's Gone Girl. Oh, can we get that done, please? I'm full of good ideas. Yeah, but it's funny how you're saying that this is all anyone's talking about, and yet this is going to be the most frustrating review because there's so much we can't talk about.
Yeah, exactly. I tried to review this on national radio last week, and you know it was really challenging because you know you've got time to fill, and there's certain things you can't. So I mean, let's start with the premise. The premise is that Ben Affleck's character and his wife Rosamund Pike are living in Missouri, I think. And
Missouri or misery?
Misery.
Ah.
Metaphor being rammed down our throat. But they have come when they met. They were in New York and they were at the height of the literary scene. They were both writers. They were both successful. But the economic downturn and an illness on the part of his mother meant that they've had to leave New York, where they felt at home, and go into the Midwest. The film starts with, for some reason, Ben Affleck going for a walk and then going to a bar very early in the morning, and that bar turns out to be owned by his twin sister. Twin sister or sister on my skeleton twinsing?
No, they were twins.
Yeah. Right, twin sister, right. They have a bit of a discussion about stuff. He goes home and there's been a break-in at his house and his wife is gone and there's various bits and pieces broken.
Yeah.
So he does what sensible people would do, and that is call the cops. And then Kim Dickens turns up, who's the Frances McDormand of this particular movie, the wise female cop
with far less air.
and she commences investigation, and of course the first thing to establish is whether she has decided to leave of her own volition or whether she has been taken,
and whether she's alive or not.
Yeah, and that's basically all the plot that we're allowed to divulge at this point.
Yep.
Because the film is told in a very similar way to the book. Apparently it's based on a best-selling novel, a novel that is in fact still best-selling, like it's still flying out the bookstores and the Kindles and what have you. It's told by the husband and the wife in sort of alternate sections, you know.
It's all going based off the wife's diary that she kept, and that's how the flashbacks are told. Mm. Which is quite cool, because the Trent Reznor and Alex Ross's music really kind of goes into almost soap opera-ish territory to really embellish her words.
Mm. And those flashbacks are absolutely crucial. And it's not very long into the film before you're starting to wonder about that classic narrative device, the unreliable narrator. Like, who are we supposed to believe in this particular situation?
And how much do we actually trust our protagonist as well? Is he the protagonist or the antagonist?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, we've got the film opens with some voiceover from Ben Affleck's character, from the husband, basically saying, you know, how much do we know about our partners? How much do we really know about what's going on inside their head? But it's and the rest of the film really attempts to sort of unravel how little we know really about what's going on. So this is a film. You know, would you classify this as a first date film, an anniversary film? Is this the kind of, you know, I have a feeling that if you're in a relationship that's that is in any trouble whatsoever, this will finish it off.
Yeah, it will. And if you use your cell phone in the cinema, it's going to turn you off your cell phone as well.
There are layers to this film. I mean, I'm not saying it's Ingmar Bergman, right? It's not. These are not deep psychological layers, but they're interesting layers in terms of simply keeping the audience guessing in terms of what's going on between these people.
Yeah, that's its biggest strength, is that it is so dense with its plotting and keeping you guessing the entire way. It took so many turns I just wasn't expecting. And it's a 2.5-hour film, but you never feel like it drags.
It felt about half the length of The Equalizer, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And it's almost, what, like half an hour more than The Equalizer? Mm.
And this is the thing, is I think I said this, I've said this in maybe not on this show or the previous show, but maybe on the radio, but I feel like after we were watching the Girl with the Dragon Tattoos, Fincher's version of that, it was like, man, this is so far and away better than the Scandinavian original. It's like, I just want Fincher to make all of the commercial pulp movies, you know, all the commercial crap. Imagine
I would watch David Fincher's Tetris the movie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, imagine if imagine if Fincher had done The Equalizer. You know, I mean, no disrespect to Fuqua, who is a capable director, but Fincher's on another level. And what frustrates me, I think, about him is that he applies all of this taste and all of this talent to really to not the deepest kind of work in the world. You know, not the deepest subjects and not the most sort of challenging psychology or...
No. But it's kind of good that he took a break from it, because he's been doing it for like the last 2 or 3 films. So it's good to see him sort of shift gears a bit.
Mm. And let's talk about our two lead actors. This is a film that was originally going to have Reese Witherspoon in it. She bought the rights to it and as a producer on this film. For one reason or another, isn't in it. And Rosamund Pike, who we last saw, I think... in
This Is the End or Jack Reacher.
She
was in she was in both those,
right? I was just thinking about the
Not this is the end at World's End, sorry,
the World's End. The World's End, yeah, that's what I was thinking, where she was the love interest for several people in that cast. And I mean, she's a great actor, former Bond girl, I seem to recall. And but this is a lead role in a massive movie, and I think she's going to become kind of legend as a result of this. This is awesome, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I would love to tell you why, but we can't. No. We can't.
Okay, so all right, so Affleck's wiener notwithstanding.
But was it?
Exactly.
No, that was the other wiener.
Exactly. I've become very fond of Ben Affleck as an actor. Not just in the films that he's directed of his own, which has shown that he's got some skills in that area, but basically ever since Hollywoodland, where he sort of came out of superhero purgatory, you know, he'd done Pearl Harbor and he'd done Daredevil and he'd become a kind of laughing stock, really. Hollywoodland, he came out of that and proved that he could do this. He is an actor of some subtlety, and I feel like this is another really, really good Affleck performance.
Yeah, especially since the movie, at least for about the first act, it all hinges on him, and he has to keep you on that knife edge about whether or not you can trust this guy, whether or not he killed his wife, whether or not he is a complete sleaze.
Yeah,
and he does such a good job.
And can you still care about? Can you actually care enough about him to continue to pay attention?
How much
of
a liar is he? Yeah. Is he faking his emotions or not? And you just cannot get a solid read on the guy. And when everything becomes clear, it just makes you realize how naturalistic of a performance that was.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to this really smarmy smile that he has to portray for the media, which, aside from Marriage, the movie is extremely cynical on mainstream media, as it should be, because they're a pack of effing vultures.
It's cynical about the media. It's cynical about relationships. It's cynical about lots.
Mainly possessiveness.
Yeah, but that seems to me that's a very Finchery thing. Like if you were going to look back at Fincher's career as an auteur and go, well, what are the themes that thread themselves through the subjects that he chooses, or the you know, there's I'm trying to remember whether there's ever been a genuine unencumbered romantic love story in a Fincher film. He doesn't do those, you know. There's always something going on behind the scenes. There's always some dislocation. There's always lies and deceit.
Yeah. Although I suppose the last time he tackled that was Girl with the Dragon Tattoo a bit, but it is the central conceit of Gone Girl. And one of the things that actually tripped me up about the movie, that sort of took me out of it, it's something I can't talk about again, but it's the movie essentially takes a massive turn around the beginning of the second act, where this a particular person is actually not the person you thought they were. And it seemed like it shifted tones quite a bit, which I would have been more angry about if it was like the end reveal, because then you'd feel absolutely betrayed. But this is for the basis of other things to come. So it's kind of easy to write, but it does feel like it undercuts a lot of the reality of the situation.
Interesting casting in the supporting roles. I think Neil Patrick Harris appears in there as an ex-boyfriend of Rosamund Pike's character. Somebody, again, we don't see that much on screen, despite the fact that he's very capable, talented, and quite a big name these days. I think the last time I saw him on the big screen, he was Brendan Gleeson's son in the second Smurfs movie.
A Million Ways to Die in the West, where he had a mustache.
Oh, was he?
And he sings about the mustache and dances about the mustache, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I missed that now that you've mentioned it.
Yeah, they thought it was funny.
And who else? Tyler Perry.
Hey, who, Tyler Perry.
Tyler
Look
Perry,
you, growing
we
up.
We don't get to see, like, they just don't release Tyler Perry's for own films here in New Zealand.
Except for Alex Cross.
Well, but even Alex Cross, he didn't, I mean, that's not one he is responsible for or directed. Like, he was just a...
Oh, right, yeah, specifically his films.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, his films as his own auteur, those films for the black community, the enormous amounts of money that he makes, Madea's cross-dressing, this, that, and the other, right?
Yeah.
So in America, he has a very different presence on screen to perhaps he would for audiences here. I think Alex Cross was truly, truly awful. And I don't know if you could necessarily put that down to him. I thought that was just a completely misguided...
I don't think he helped the situation, but yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, here he is. He sort of knows which way things work, and you know, it's a good performance.
He's the most charming lawyer I've seen, and in yet, quite a while.
And yet, he's still as utterly shark-like as
he's still a devil, and I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah,
but charming as hell.
So here we go. We've got Gone Girl. The whole world is going to be talking about this. I sort of feel like if I was in the star rating business, it would be a 4.5 or a 4-star. Like it didn't. It's not a film that I would unreservedly recommend. I think that there are going to be people for whom some of the stuff that goes on in it is triggering. In terms of depending on your own background and your own history, I think it sails pretty close to the wind in terms of misogyny. Except for the only sort of saving grace is that this sort of hates everybody.
the misogyny
it's not
does,
for everybody.
The misogyny does come from unlikable people.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's the film necessarily that is doing that, but I think it's what it's doing is it's shining a little bit of a light on society as a whole. You know, but it's a bit of a cop out. I know. But
quickly, we should also talk about what you think of the ending.
Well, yeah.
My thoughts exactly.
Yeah. Look, this is a film that couples should go to, and they should allow enough time afterwards so that they don't go to bed angry. You know, like you really need to have a discussion.
Oh, it's
going
to test you. That's good. If you're questioning your relationship and need something to really draw the line, go see Gone Girl.
Yeah. Let's try and wrap this up with two words.
Okay. My two-word review for Gone Girl is thrilling wedlock.
Mm-hmm. My two words for Gone Girl are just go. And that is our show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Next week, Kaylee is going to be back with us from Canada, and we're going to be talking about the Swedish punk classic We Are the Best, among other things. That one's getting released next week. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious, where you'll find a way to communicate with us via email, or you can make a comment on the blog. Feel free to do that. I won't be too hurt if you give us some criticism. You can follow us on Twitter at Rancho Podcast, where we tweet and retweet fairly incessantly about things that we think are interesting. You can interact with us on Letterboxd too. We love Letterboxd. Our username there is Rancho Notorious. The show is a Funerals and Snakes production. Season 1 is executive produced by Robert Catto, Random Films, Claire Quiray, Mark Gubey, Anthony S. Pratt, Fred Thompson, and Matthew Buchanan. And I seem to recall that Kaylee decided on a fairly arbitrary season length number, so I think we're going to go to like 16 or 18 or something random like that. So, so season 1 almost coming to an end. The theme music for the show is Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Los Plantronics. You can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to play you out with some more music. Here's regular Fincher collaborators Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross with a track from the Gone Girl soundtrack. This is called Technically, Missing. Special thanks to my partner, Karen, who makes sure that everyone who visits here at Rancho Notorious is well fed and watered.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks to Kaylee in Canada for the banner illustration on the website. That's her contribution to this particular show. And extra special thanks to our guest host, Liam McGurran from flix.co.nz and flix.com.au.
Thank you. Au revoir.
It's been a pleasure having you with us. That's good night from me, Dan Slevin.
Good night from me,